Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here's your host, Joe Kuzma and Zach Meckler.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and look who we have here. For those of us joining us on video, and those also listening here for our pregame show featuring the Steelers versus the Browns this upcoming Sunday, guess who's joining us? The man, the myth, the legend, conspicuous by his absence for a little while. I'll let him brag about that or talk about it. I don't know. You're probably not going to brag, but congratulations to you on your new job. And we see you in your new humble surroundings there, so we don't want to say anything about. He doesn't have the fancy, you know, I don't have Brian set up, so I can't talk anything. But welcome back, a coach slash professor, Zach Meckler. Zach, how's it going, my friend?
It's good to be back. It has been a long, I mean, it's been probably, what now, 2-3 months. I think August or July was the last time I was on here. It's been a minute. But yeah, it's, you know, moved up to New York coaching football up here at Utica College and loving every second of it. It's taken a lot of my time. And it's good to be back and talk some Steelers football. I'm still living and breathing all the Steelers stuff. I'm sure people in the office have gotten annoyed listening to me talk about it every day. I know there was quite a few Giants fans on our staff. So when we won that first game that week one, I came in there and had the Steelers face mask on that you'd sent me, and you know, hat nowadays, you know, I make sure to rub it in when I get the opportunity to. But surprisingly, a lot of Steelers fans up here in New York, more than I thought there would be.
Yeah, Steelers Nation, truly worldwide, and you know, you're looking good, man. I know you were saying you chopped the hair off, so.
Yeah. Yeah,
man,
hot.
I mean, he had the giant afro. If you ever saw, I know some people were like surprised. Hey, we put a face to the voice, and it's like, well, most of us are posting selfies and stuff on Twitter. I mean, we've been out in the public view, but just not on YouTube. But I know not everyone follows us because otherwise our Twitter followers, our followership would be a little higher. Little subtle hint there. You can find all our info at steelcityunderground.com. While we're at it, chilling it, hey, nice hat, man, because you know what, me and Brian, I'm not a flat brim guy. So I didn't go with the Carhartt 47 thing today, but you're representing, of course. So Zach's doing his due diligence here. So looking good for anybody who wants to see it. What do you think, though, man? They're great hats, though.
I love them. I'm a big fan of Carhartt. You know, we got I had a Utica Carhartt hat. I almost wore it to this, and I remember we were doing a Steelers podcast, so I had to drop it. They make a good product, man. I can't complain whatsoever. This and the beanie. Both the beanie's warm. I know, for being up here in that upstate New York weather, that gets kind of cold. So if you don't get a lot of use this year.
I haven't put the beanie on. Man, I'll tell you what. And I said, you know, I'm bald. I'm not taking this off again. I'm like a LL Cool J. You're always going to see me with the hat on when I'm on video. I mean, I'm not like ashamed or anything. I mean, I used to make fun of my dad. I knew it was going to be genetic when I grew up, and I made that conscious decision. You know, that bald is beautiful, and I can make some lewd innuendo jokes about, you know, whatever, you know, less hair, more, you know, head. But, you know, anyways, yeah, I always keep the hat on. You're always going to see me with the hat. I've got tons of hats, but the stocking hats, man, I mean, sometimes they tend to itch and everything like that. So I haven't gotten to that yet. Plus, you know what? It's been warm in my whereabouts. I mean, this was the first really cool day. Drizzly, rainy, nasty. I'm sure that weather's coming. Of course, that is your weather up there, and probably wearing the beanie quite a bit for the most part. Not necessarily, you know, tropical climate or whatever there, but I digress. We have a football game to talk about, an important game. 4-0 Pittsburgh Steelers hosting with a minimal amount of fans, unfortunately. 4-1 Cleveland Browns, who've ripped off 4 in a row. I know we like to make fun of the Cleveland Browns quite a bit on, well, everybody does. It's a Steelers fan. Probably not going to give them the same kind of respect that you usually would. And for that reason is because, what, they hadn't had this kind of a start since Bill Belichick was their coach in like 1994 or 95. It was somewhere right around, it may have been the 95 season, the last year they were in existence there. And then they ripped out the, you know, stands and everything at old Cleveland Memorial and throw it on the field and whatever else. And Nick Saban was the defensive coordinator. And, I mean, you really got to go back to some memories. And then there were some other statistics that went all the way back to, like, the 60s that actually predate modern era NFL. So Cleveland is doing some things finally since coming back to the league in 1999 that they haven't done in a long time. You got Baker Mayfield, who's finally tied Ben Roethlisberger for the same amount of wins at First Energy Stadium, the, you know, the home of the Cleveland Browns. Ben has pretty much owned the everybody since his existence there. He has more wins there than any other quarterback now not named Baker Mayfield. So, but you know what? I think that's a good place to start. You've got a high-powered matchup here. You got two teams that have won four straight. Obviously, the Browns have played one extra game in that opening week. They got embarrassed by the Baltimore Ravens. You could make arguments that both teams have faced kind of inferior opponents to a certain degree. But I think the biggest thing here is that this isn't – well, I don't know, man. You're a younger guy. You're younger than me. I'm 38. Have the Browns been relevant in your lifetime, I guess? Because I don't – for me – I can remember getting a little tense. I can remember like Bubby Brister's and guys like that, Bernie Kosar, Vinny Testaverde, and you know those type of guys that you know maybe your generation doesn't. Does this game like you probably you as a football guy probably understand the importance and sense that this game is bigger than it has been in a while? But when you think of Cleveland Browns, have you ever thought of them the same way that you're thinking about them this Sunday? Probably in your lifetime of watching football.
No, it's funny. I was born in 1994, which was the last time that they had this kind of a start. So for me, you know, I remember they had that one year, I think, with Derek Anderson when they were 10-6 or 9-7 or whatever and missed the playoffs. But this is probably I think this is a better team than they were at that point, obviously. You know, seeing what they've done regardless of the opponents, that I want to touch on that real quick because there's going to be a little vent session here because it's been bothering me with people talking about the Steelers starting out. You can't control what the caliber of opponent you were playing. Here's my take. If the Steelers started out 2-2, people would be saying they weren't good. They're 4-0 playing inferior opponents. Now people are saying, it's not a big deal. 4-0 is 4-0. It's a lot better than being 3-1, and it's better than being 2-2, or even worse, 0-4. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if the Browns have been playing inferior opponents or the Steelers have been playing inferior opponents. You have to win each week to have a chance of winning a division, to beat the teams you need to get to the Super Bowl. Guess what? If you win the last game, and back in February, you know, you're going to do what you need to do to win. You know, for me, this is a very good Browns team. I know we talked about it a lot in the back channels at Steel City Underground in terms of, you know, is this finally going to be the team? Because every year it was preseason Super Bowl championships for the Browns. But it seems like Kevin Stefanski finally is a dude that's got this team to where they need to be. He seems to actually have an identity. I don't think Hugh Jackson or Freddie Kitchens ever had a actual identity for what they were trying to do with this team. I think it's been very clear. They're going to make Baker a game manager, and they're going to make this be a run-oriented team. And I think that's why you've seen to this point. And I think it's going to be interesting how that plays out because of how strong they are on the ground and actually have an identity for the first time in my lifetime. That's for sure. You know, so seeing that makes me a little more nervous for a Browns matchup than I normally would be. You know, there was always the one hiccup. I remember the Johnny Manziel game specifically whenever he beat the Steelers. Probably the one time I was more frustrated with the Steelers-Browns result, but at the end of the day, this is a competitive team, and this should be a very good matchup with a lot more implications than you would have thought originally going into the season. So for me, as a young guy who hasn't seen a Browns team at this juncture, at this point in the season, since the year I was born November 94, you know, so here we are, probably the tail end of that season. I don't know how the Browns finished out that year. I know I can tell you it didn't finish with the Super Bowl. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It's definitely going to be a better matchup, I think, than what I originally thought.
Yeah, and it was more than likely here, 94. They lost the divisional matchup, which, spoiler alert, it was against the Steelers. They lost all three, I believe, all three matchups that year against the Steelers. In fact, I'm going to try and back up what I'm talking because I think this actually happened twice. I want to say the year you were referencing, it was either, I think it was Derek Anderson, it wasn't Jeff Garcia at quarterback. I think Cleveland, that was the last time they actually made the postseason. If I'm looking right, let me see, 2002, lost the wild card, also to the Steelers in a very much closer game. It was only a 3-point game, 36-33. You go back to 1994, the Steelers were, well, at this point, they were 13-4 on kind of counting the playoff record. So 12-4. Entering the postseason against a 12, is that right? 12-5. I don't know. I'm reading it off of that's because this is divisional round. So Steelers would have had to bye here. So 11-5 Cleveland Browns entering that postseason as well back in 1995, man. Well, the game was played in 95. This was the 94 season, so they were 11-5, second in division. Bill Belichick was still their guy. Vinny Testaverde. Man, there's just some names in here I forget about, like Tommy Vardell and Eric Metcalf, and there's some names that are really there. But then, you know, they were 10-6 under Romeo Crennel, who now takes the Texans' job. And let's talk about that for a second. We talk about inferior opponents. It's like, it's still Deshaun Watson. You still got David Johnson to slow down. You still Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller and Kenny Stills and Kiki Kuti and all these guys. There's still pro football players on the other side. Saquon Barkley isn't some type of chump that the Steelers just happened to beat up on week one. He was still Saquon Barkley, okay? Week two, you can make a little more of an argument, Drew Lock. Then he gets hurt, Jeff Driscoll, and Jeff Driscoll still comes in and fairly competent. And then, you know, last week everyone wants to, you know, talk about the Eagles. And, you know, I think the Eagles are a talented team when they're healthy. Unfortunately, they're missing a lot of bodies out there, wide receivers, offensive linemen, things of that nature. And the Steelers shut down what they needed to shut down, being, you know, mainly Miles Sanders, mainly Zach Ertz. So you look at the Cleveland Browns and they have a whole bunch of different things that you're going to have to look at and focus on. And I guess some people are going to say that the Steelers' defensive numbers may be padded by opponent. But you look at the Cleveland Browns, they only scored 6 points against the Baltimore Ravens. They get 35 points on offense against the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm not going to say the Bengals are anything even decent this year. They're still looking at a top 10 draft pick. Washington football team, same territory, 34 points scored on them. And let's talk about this too, because these scores are like, they gave up 38 to the Ravens, 30 to the Bengals, 20 to the Washington football team. I can't even tell you who their quarterback is right now. They're just playing roulette. 38 to the Cowboys, 23 to the Colts. And, you know, they end up putting up 49 against the Cowboys. That was a shootout, bunch of turnovers, and they're getting turnovers. They have like a streak of however many turnovers per game. That's going to be a big storyline heading into this one. But I just look at this too as they're playing some teams with the Bengals, Washington, Cowboys, all week defensive football teams. I'm not going to say the Colts are a great defensive football team, but they were also missing Darius Leonard. So that did weaken them, soften them up a little bit. Also doesn't help when you have guys throwing pick sixes all over the field. I believe Dak Prescott may have thrown one. I'd have to look at this box score. I can tell you Phillip Rivers did because I saw it before he even threw it. That's how telegraphed it was. It was bad. It was classic vintage Phillip Rivers, who, you know, the Steelers may see later in this season. So, and then the Cowboys, the infamous, we can't tackle Odell Beckham for a loss, Aldon Smith, and he goes 50 yards down the field. I mean, geez, oh man. How about these end round plays? They're in vogue right now, too. You had Ray McLeod last week, too. So you're going to have to watch the Browns offense versus Steelers defense is definitely the big storyline here, obviously, because you got Myles Garrett coming back after the whole helmet strike incident that got him suspended for the remainder of last year. And, what else we got here? We got the gadget plays. Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham are throwing the ball. But you got Nick Chubb. He's banged up on IR. But they've been doing okay. Kareem Hunt, he's no joker here either, or clown, as some people would call him. You know, on our side, you have fan base that would call him the Clowns instead of the Browns. And take a look at a couple more injuries that are going on here as we look on the offensive side of the ball. Hunt was actually limited in practice both days this week, too. Now, they still had the number one run, pretty much the number one run offense, I believe, right? You're the wizard with all the stats. I know the Ravens are up there too, so I wasn't entirely sure.
Browns number one.
Yeah, they had, what is his name? Is it Johnson? I can't remember his first name, but he came in. He was an undrafted guy and still piled up a bunch of yards 2 weeks ago in Chubb's absence. But there's all kind of goofy stuff going on here. You got Jarvis Landry didn't practice. Baker Mayfield's limited practice 2 days with a chest injury. But the offensive line, you got Wyatt Teller, right guard, who's probably going to be replaced by Chris Hubbard, the former Steeler. And J.C. Treader has been limited with his knee, and he made it a go last week in a similar type of practice situation scenario, but then he also left the game too. And there's an opportunity there when you're talking about the Steelers defense and those horses up front. You get the four. You could might as well. We should start calling them the four horsemen. I think Brian was starting to call them the three horsemen at one point when it was Hargrave. But you got to talk about Hayward, Tuitt, T.J. Watt, Bud Dupree, and also considering, you know, T.J. was back to full practice. So those four guys can just – they could create pressure. Three of them alone could usually create pressure without a whole lot of help. If the Browns are missing one or two of their starting offensive linemen, I think that's going to spell some trouble, not only for the run game. I think the Steelers are very well equipped to stop. But you put enough pressure on Baker Mayfield, he's great when there's no pressure. But you start to put a little heat on that guy, he makes mistakes all over the field.
Yeah, I think you've seen that a lot in the fourth quarter of games. I mean, his pass rating, I saw, I believe, is like 29.7 or somewhere in that ballpark in the fourth quarter. You know, he's not getting it done. And the Steelers have traditionally, especially over the last 2 years with this defense, that's when they start getting some of their best pressure, especially if they're up in games. You're forcing another quarterback to have to go back and win with his arm. Baker, I think, has shown us that he is not right now a capable enough quarterback in terms of trying to take over a game the way we've seen Pat Mahomes do it, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, these guys that you know that when you need to get the game on the line and put the ball in their hands are going to get it done for you. In the fourth quarter of games right now, he hasn't been getting it done. I'm not saying he never will, but right now through his very short career, he hasn't got to that point where he is taking over games late and being able to put the pressure on the defense and win the game and get the ball in the end zone. You know, so if the Steelers get themselves up into a game, I think you're going to start seeing that that pressure start making him crack. And I think that's why the Steelers have had success against teams like the Browns in the past, especially with this defense, who now has led the league in sacks the last 2 years. It's probably going to lead again this year when it's all said and done, because they're so effective at just bringing four guys. You know, when they're bringing pressure with four guys and can have guys covered on the back end, that's great. Now you start throwing in a Mike Hilton in there. Now you start bringing both Bud and T.J. Watt off the edge. You know, you start getting five- and six-man blitzes in there against a very porous offensive line that has some guys banged up. You're going to get the pressure naturally doing that type of work. I think that's going to end up boding well for the Steelers if they're in a position where they're now in control of the game by the third, fourth quarter, and not one of these situations where we've seen the Steelers go through and, you know, they're getting behind or they're in a game that's much closer than it should be, which I don't know why Steelers fans still complain about that, because that's just very clearly the makeup of this team as it is a team that's going to take it to the wire and force us to be in a point where we're sitting there eating all of our antacid tablets in the fourth quarter of games, you know. So if the Steelers can do that, though, I think the Browns and specifically Baker Mayfield have not been able to produce well under pressure. I think if the Steelers can get that normal stuff down and control the ground game, well, like you said, that's going to be the biggest story, in my opinion. The number one rushing offense in the NFL and the number two rushing defense in the NFL going up against each other, that's going to be an exciting matchup. I don't know who wins. In my opinion, I think the Steelers are better equipped for it because they're fully healthy right now. I think the Browns have gotten a lot of their stuff based on those gadget plays. And we've seen the Steelers be beat by those gadget plays as recently as this year, you know. So I think that's going to be a very big thing for the Steelers. Can they lock down those gadget plays? Can they stop the trick plays and the end arounds and the jet sweeps and all that stuff that the Browns have deployed this season? If they can't, it's going to be a bigger issue for that run defense. You're going to see a hit on their stats. I think, like I said, I think they're better equipped with the injuries the Browns have on their offensive line and the weapons the Steelers just have naturally in their front seven. They should be able to control the line of scrimmage. And if they do that and force the ball into Baker Mayfield's hands, I like their odds as a unit. What happens on the flip side is a whole different story. You know, with all the injuries the Browns have on their back end in the secondary.
Well, you know? Yeah, let's get to that in 1 second, because I was gonna pose a few more questions here. When you're looking at the Browns offense versus the Steelers defense, you're looking at there's a lot of talk about, you know, okay, Browns are scoring points, 31.2, fourth in the league. The Steelers are 29.5, only they're 10th in the league, so they're still in the top 10. But you look at the points allowed, you flip it the other way, they're allowing the 25th most with 29.8, to the Steelers only allowing 21.8, and they're 6th. So you're looking at a higher scoring offense versus a defense that doesn't allow as much scoring. And you can still argue, man, maybe it's opponent, whatever may be the case. But that definitely is the matchup. Now, the other thing I was going to maybe pose here, Steelers have not had major problems with tight ends yet this season. We keep hearing, you know, hey, we don't hear a whole lot about Devin Bush. Maybe the one time, maybe he got beat by Noah Fant, the one tight end that did get him. Evan Engram he hasn't really done anything, period, with the New York Giants this year, but that's a whole other story. But he's a threat. Zach Ertz is definitely a threat. Am I missing the other guy? Well, whoever plays for the Texans, but
Darren Fells with them, so
yeah. I mean, and they didn't do a whole lot there either. It's one of those things where it's kind of like Eric Ebron's just starting to come on, but it's kind of like, you know, like a Vance McDonald deal where they don't see a lot of targets when you're talking about somebody like, you're not really trying to shut down Darren Fells. You're trying to shut down Zach Ertz. You're trying to shut down Evan Engram. You're probably trying to shut down Noah Fant, even though they don't really, probably didn't utilize him enough in that game plan Denver anyway. So the Browns have like three tight ends, man. They're almost turning into the Ravens. So yeah. You still have David Njoku just came back. And I think he's entering his final rookie season, maybe, out of his rookie contract. Former first round pick. And he may not even be he's not the number one guy. They brought in Austin Hooper from Atlanta. And then you got Hunter Bryant also. So, and Bryant has also been involved. And let me look this up, because it seems like these guys get their due. Target wise, yeah, obviously your target hogs here. Odell Beckham targeted 39 times, 21 receptions. Jarvis Landry has the same amount, only on 28 targets, on 11 fewer targets, caught as many balls. Everything, I think he has stuff stuck to his gloves, to be completely honest. Austin Hooper targeted 27 times. He's caught 17 of those. Kareem Hunt, 11 of 15. Harrison Bryant, not Hunter Bryant, Harrison Bryant, 7 of 11. So these guys get involved, and then they threw four passes and Njoku's way too. They all get involved, and the backs usually do too, because Nick Chubb has had a few targets. They even tried to get D'Ernest Johnson. Couldn't think of his name to begin with too. Now that I'm looking at the roster, it's like, I make it all look easy now, you know. And let me not be foolish in saying this. I know the Cleveland Browns very well, so somebody's going to come on here, blah, 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 you don't know what you're talking about. I dealt with half of my family, being a native of Northeast Ohio, living in between the two cities of Cleveland and Pittsburgh, where I've seen enough of my fair share of Cleveland Browns. I know about as much of them as I do the Steelers. Maybe not as much, but pretty much any other NFL team, I know Cleveland like the back of my hand. So there's certain things I feel good about. I feel good about Odell Beckham not having a huge game. I feel good, even better about that if Jarvis Landry isn't a part of it. Do I feel good that Austin Hooper, one of these guys, aren't going to have maybe a huge, huge game? But I think distributing the ball, I think the tight ends is something that they got to look at when it comes to Cleveland. We're going to see if they're going to attack guys like Vince Williams. But what I'm getting back to that is like, you don't hear a lot about Devin Bush or even Minka Fitzpatrick for that matter. And even Terrell Edmonds. I mean, Terrell Edmonds, I thought, had a very nice game last week. You don't hear a lot about these guys because they're not throwing in those directions. They're afraid. These guys are afraid to put the ball there. You want to put the ball in the middle of the field near Minka going up for Harrison Bryant, for example, by all means, test him. And he's going to get tested because I think Baker's going to be running around, especially if you have a few of these injuries. I mean, Chris Hubbard was signed. He wasn't originally a tackle. He was like a center guard, and he moved over to tackle. He hadn't played tackle in the NFL until the Steelers put him there. He was more or less like the tackle eligible guy, like Zach Banner was last year. The Browns brought him in. He was supposed to be the right tackle, and that experiment didn't work out. So he's a highly paid guy who's coming in reserve, and he's got experience, but he is playing a little bit out of position from what he was probably accustomed to playing. So it's going to be interesting to see that. And, you know, you're the offensive line guy here. Tell me, man. Jedrick Wills, you know, they put him over there at left tackle, and you were talking about whether or not that would work. And Jack Conklin's had a good season at right tackle, so we got to respect that. But what all do you see here as I bring up all of those points before we flip sides of the ball here?
I know during the draft season, I was very critical of the Browns drafting Jedrick Wills, a guy who really had no left tackle experience, or really I didn't think would be a natural left tackle fit in the NFL. You know, I think he's had wrinkles. I think he's improved steadily. As I said before, if my analysis is incorrect, I will eat it gladly. And I think so far he's beginning to prove me wrong. I'm not going to sit there and say I was completely wrong yet, because it's a long season. We're five games in for the Browns at least. Jack Conklin, you know, was a Pro Bowl, All Pro caliber right tackle, and then he had a couple down years with Tennessee, and now he's back up to being where he is. You know, I think that's going to be an interesting matchup with TJ Watt. I'll be interested to see how he goes through and makes that work. I still am not fully sold on the Browns being able to properly protect Baker. I think they've been allowing a decent amount of pressure in terms of what they've been doing up front. And obviously the ground game is working for them, whether it's from misdirection, whether it's from some of the end around, some, whether it's the gadget plays or whatever, the ground game is working for them. And that's been their identity. You know, their identity has been to make Baker into that kind of game manager, which in my opinion isn't really the role of a first overall draft pick. You don't draft the first, a quarterback first overall to be a game manager, but that's a whole different podcast. You know, I think realistically he is the game manager right now. I'm not saying he hasn't been better. I'm not saying he can't be better down the road. But right now, we saw a kind of a similar thing with Kevin Stefanski when he was in Minnesota. I mean, I'm not saying Kirk Cousins was a game manager, but he utilized multiple tight ends. He really leaned on that ground game with Dalvin Cook and, you know, Alexander Mattinson and all them. So, you know, I think realistically, it's not surprising that that's exactly what we're seeing right now. Multiple tight ends. I think everyone knew that was coming whenever they went out of their way to sign Austin Hooper, when no one thought they would go for that direction, when they needed secondary help, when they needed offensive line help. You know, so they go out and get Austin Hooper. They draft Harrison Bryant. They already had David Njoku, you know, and then they try to refortify that offensive line. They have two quality running backs in Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Nick Chubb, I think, is one of the most underrated top running backs in the league. And Kareem Hunt, we already know what he was with all his time with the Chiefs. And then Darius Johnson did his thing, you know, as an undrafted guy. So they got the weapons. They have the ability to make it work with that offensive line in the ground game. That's why they're doing that and pounding the rock. But we've seen these teams that are so run dependent get behind in games and not be able to take them over because of that, no matter how good their offensive line is. Because at the end of the day, you have to rely on Baker to make those decisions. You have to rely on the offensive line to be able to pin their, you know, put their feet in the mud and get the job done. And when the defense is putting their ears back and rushing after the passer. Whether they get to that point, I don't know. In my mind, I still think it's an offensive line that's struggling in the pass game in terms of being able to protect Baker consistently. I'm not saying they don't. I'm sure there's some Browns fans will sit there and say the same thing I said to you. They don't know what we're talking about. I don't think they're doing it at a high enough level to make it worth the while against a team like the Steelers that get after the passer as effectively as they do. And as I say that, they'll probably allow zero sacks in this game, which I don't think
they'll be. Yeah, I sincerely doubt that's going to be the case.
But, you know, I still think they get the job done well enough in the run game. I think that's helped Jedrick Wills a lot, because you're not asking him to be on an island. You're asking him to do what he did extraordinarily well at Alabama, and that's run block and just be a road grader and push guys around in the trenches. He's done that well. We already knew Jack Conklin could do that well. And then their interior, I mean, you know, they have some guys on that interior that are good dudes that can push guys around. I don't see it necessarily being an overall threat at the very juncture as we're sitting here. But I think they are a very formidable unit in terms of getting the ball moved down the field in the run game and doing enough to keep Baker on his feet whenever he can hopefully get enough time for him to make the decisions, make the reads, and make the throws he needs to, which he, you know, has done very well at times. There's been times where he's been great and he's been lights out, and there's other times where he has been very shaky at best. So what version of Baker you get, what version of offensive line you get, is going to depend upon what version of the Steelers defense you get this week. You're going to get the guys that are Saxberg, you know, or you're going to get, or Blitzberg or whatever. You're going to get the unit that's, you know, allowing these big plays to get to them and where they're point where they're trying to bend and not break on the 1 yard line.
Yeah. And you have Baker only throwing for, out of these five games, he hasn't thrown for 300 in any of them. Hasn't thrown for 250 in any of them. He got close last week with 247. And then you also have 219, and then everything else is 189, 156, 165.
So he's averaging 198, correct?
You know what? I haven't the slightest clue. Let's see what it says. 195, close. 195.2 per game average. So, yeah, completion percentage wasn't that strong last week. It was stronger against the Bengals, the Washington football team. I can't get used to saying that. And then the Cowboys. And, I mean, those teams just – their defense is non-existent. And they were talking about, you know, the Browns offensive line. Hey, they stepped it up. They stopped that Washington pass rush. Chase Young went out of that game early, I believe, second quarter maybe. And, you know, that game was a little closer when he was still in there, and all of a sudden it really fell apart. Not to say that Washington's really much of – I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to end up eating my words on that. The Steelers play like, you know, stink the joint out or something when they play them. But watch later in the year. So flip sides of the ball here because, you know, there isn't a whole lot else to say. Oh, well, you know what? There is. Because making these Baker comparisons, hold on a second. He has actually thrown more passes than Ben Roethlisberger, but he's played one entire game more. Probably, I would assume, 60 snaps or so more than Ben Roethlisberger has. And he's thrown only 9 more passes. He's only completed completed 7 fewer passes than Ben has so far this season. Ben has thrown for more yards, 40 more yards, right on the nose, and 1 more touchdown than Baker has, all in 1 fewer game. So it just goes to show you, if they have to rely on throwing the ball, you force them to throw the ball, there could be trouble there. So, and they're going on the road too, and I know what you're going to say, and it's like, it's a bus trip, and there's not that many fans, so I don't know what kind of real home field advantage the Steelers truly do have in this one, but we shall see. Anyways, now we could switch sides. I'm going to go on the injury report real quick because you started to go there. And let me see, is there anyone in their secondary that's healthy outside of Denzel Ward? I mean,
I know Delpit and Greedy Williams are both out.
They were on IR. Those were guys penciled in to start at the beginning of the season. You got Carl Joseph as a DNP for the last 2 days, and he's the other starter alongside Ronnie Harrison, who was in concussion protocol. I believe Ronnie Harrison had the pick six last week of Philip Rivers, or he had one of those turnovers. So you have maybe potentially, not only do you have one of the guys who was penciled in to maybe compete as a starting safety or be at least a depth guy, you have the current 2 starting safeties not practicing at all yet up until this point. We're going to see what happens here on Friday. Who else am I missing here? I mean, we had Sheldon Richardson is back to a full practice. Olivier Vernon, defensive end, limited practice. Very important there because Myles Garrett is basically, right now, he's a leader, leading maybe, for defensive MVP. He's one of those names that are up there. He's wrecking havoc. He's a terror. He's trying to prove a point. He's maybe even doing a bigger job of it than maybe TJ Watt, but again, played one more extra game than TJ has to this point. Going to be interesting to see what happens here. You know, he's going to have a fire lit under him. I understand that. I don't want to make a whole to-do of all of this stuff. Oh, Larry Ogunjobi also with an abdomen limited practice too. So it's another one of those guys along that defensive front that I think it's a formidable defensive front for a Steelers offensive line. I don't know. It's a lot of pressure if Kevin Dotson has to jump in for David DeCastro, or David DeCastro is still banged up feeling it as well. Steelers should have the same worries. Marquise Pouncey, still limited or full? Where did he go to? Let me see. Full practice on Thursday. So he appears to be back. So you also have Chukwuma Okorafor, who is a first-year starter here and going to be entering his 4th game as a starter. So there's some similar concerns here as you would have maybe as we were talking and ragging on the Browns offensive line with the Steelers facing the Browns front 4 if they were at full strength. However, they may not be. And I think that bodes well for the Steelers' offense, especially against, just look at anything in the middle of the field. I know Mac Wilson is probably, you talk about a guy that neither of us liked during the draft process. I think he carved out his role pretty well with the Browns thus far. But Sione Takitaki, B.J. Goodson, these guys that are in there that are playing in the middle of this field, and you're probably, you're looking at maybe you got Terrence Mitchell, and Denzel Ward. Oh, I'm sorry. Andrew Sendejo is the other guy. But Ronnie Harrison's out there quite a bit, too. So Sendejo's a starter, too, at safety. So you've got him. But overall, like their secondary, I don't think, was very strong prior to injuries. They're going to be facing a true test, particularly. We'll see if Deontay Johnson's back or not. But we saw what Chase Claypool did last week. And he could open some things up for Juju. You got Eric Ebron involved in this thing now. And James Washington, quietly, making some big plays. Moving chains, getting the job done, catching the balls he's supposed to be catching here, giving everybody a breather. That can't be understated. Those are still 3 guys, and Ray McLeod gets involved last week, too. You know what I mean? It's like if they're full strength or not, they still got a lot for the Browns to keep, to keep their hands full, particularly defending the pass. Now, this is where I have a little bit of a problem here, Zach. Just how much do the Steelers balance the run game with the pass game? Because we've been talking about this, and it seems like there's no creativity maybe with Randy Fichtner Maybe there's no Mac Canada fingerprints on the system yet. You know what I mean? But I don't know if you, I don't know if the wise decision is to just run on first down, run on second down, and then try and throw something where everybody can actually know the pass is coming and defend against it. You need some play action here. And I don't think the Steelers have shown their entire hand. They've been playing with a lead. They're not putting some things on film. They're not pulling all the rabbits out of the hat, so to speak. I think we're going to see some things this weekend, especially now that the rust is really getting knocked off of Ben. He's looking sharp. Everything seems to be in sync. I think the Steelers' offense is going to surprise us again. I'm going to put another prediction. I'm going to put it out here, and I'm already going to put my words on the website over at steelcityunderground.com as well. I think Big Ben has a big game. I think Ben goes over 300 yards, but I also think the offense goes over 30 points in this one too.
I can see it happen. I will say, admittedly, I'm more worried about this matchup than I was in the earlier discussion about the Browns offense and Steelers defense. For whatever reason, I'm sure Browns fans will say I'm short-sighted for that. I just feel like the even though the defense hasn't been the same unit that we saw last year, I somehow feel like they're more equipped to shut down Baker Mayfield. The running game is a different story. I think they're equipped to shut down Baker Mayfield and make him ineffective. On the flip side, even with all those injuries on that defense, I mean, I agree. Myles Garrett, I don't think is being talked about nearly enough as a player right now. Say what you want to. I'm sure Steelers fans are still extraordinarily salty and frustrated and angry and whatever emotion you want to, and rightfully so from the incident that took place on that game last night in primetime, or last year in primetime. But he's playing out of his mind right now, and I think he should be one of the guys that's in the front-running conversation for Defensive Player of the Year right now. But you look at that secondary, even with all the injuries they had, they're still leading the NFL right now in takeaways as a defensive unit. I think they have 12 takeaways right now going in and going into week six, which for a secondary that's depleted, they're still being advantageous in making those opportunities and taking those opportunities away. On the flip side, you have Ben Roethlisberger right now, who's arguably being the most efficient we've ever seen him be, even though he's almost taking that pseudo game manager role so far because he hasn't been asked to throw the ball vertically as much, even though he can, which has been a big taboo topic on Twitter, as people have been seeing lately, because they take one sound bite and they run with it. And then they go through and you have the opportunity to, you know, you have the run game that was ineffective last week. Then you have the run game that also is the only team in the league through the first 3 weeks to have a 100-yard rusher. So which version are you going to get? I think the fact that you've seen Ben be efficient, you know, his touchdown to interception ratio is 10-1 right now, which if you go back, I think there's only one other season where he was even remotely close to being that efficient in terms of having that many touchdowns with that little interceptions. I think the closest I found was 9-1. You know, so he's protecting the ball, which has always been one of Big Ben's biggest criticisms from fans and from media. Like, he turns the ball over a lot. Even though he's throwing the ball still a decent amount, he's not turning it over, and he's being efficient. He's getting good passer ratings. He's getting the checkdowns. He's getting involved with misdirection. You know, I think that's going to bode well for them. And if the Steelers' offensive line, particularly if David DeCastro is there or if Kevin Dotson's there, I think both are going to have an opportunity. Obviously, you want to see DeCastro out there. He's an all-pro guard. He's, in my opinion, the best offensive lineman on that unit. You want to see him out there. You know, they pull him so much. They pull Pouncey so much. Get those guys out in space, and you never know what's going to happen. I don't want to see the same thing, though, happens, going back to your point about the predictability in terms of the play calling. When you have armchair quarterbacks at home that are being able to predict what play is coming, that gets highly concerning to me. I'm not saying you have to abandon it. The Steelers have a script. They stick to that script pretty religiously in the first parts of games. I think that's why fans also get frustrated. But teams do that. That's just a strict coaching philosophy that a lot of coaches have. We have our 10-20 play script. We're sticking to it until we see what the defense is going to give us. And then we start deviating based on that, based on game flow. The Steelers seem to be, and Randy Fichtner seems to be a guy that's going to stick to that script no matter what throws at him, no matter how ineffective the plays may be. I think that's a big part. I know we've talked about this in a previous podcast. That's a big part, in my opinion, why the Steelers are as slow of starters as they are typically in games. You know, having however many, 21 games where they haven't scored a touchdown on the opening drive, why they sometimes get themselves into a hole early in the first half or whatever, where they don't really start getting dominant until the second half of games. I think seeing Ben effectively, you know, dink and dunk down the field with the weapons he has, James Washington is the one guy that I want to talk about right now. People look at James Washington as like the guy who's going to blow the top off of defense. We're seeing him get the intermediate throws. He's moving the chains. He might pick up only a 5-yard gain, but he's sure-handed and he's doing what he needs to do. That style right now caters to what Ben is very good at, in terms of getting the ball down the field in an efficient and an effective manner. But then you start seeing some of the splash plays based on, you know, play design, like the touchdown that Juju had where no one was within 20 yards of him because of complete busted coverage that was all based on just the flow of the play. Then you have Chase Claypool, who's proving to be a very viable deep threat where you can put him one-on-one on an island and watch him run down the field and beat the dude over the top with a great release, great speed, and just his overall freakish athleticism at 6'4", 235, or 238. Seeing him do that stuff and showing that Ben still has that arm, that's why I think if they can get those mismatches, you know, I don't know if the Browns have truly played a team that has as many weapons on offense out wide as the Steelers do. You know, like
not Washington?
I know, surprisingly not Washington. You know, I think that is going to be the difference in why I don't disagree with you in terms of the Steelers being able to put up 30, you know, for a second consecutive week, because I think that the Steelers have the mismatches on the outside and over the secondary that if the run game can't get going for whatever reason, I think they can move the ball down the field. I thought they moved the ball down the field last year at Duck Hodges, you know, and so you get Ben back, you have Chase Claypool adding a different weapon. You have Deontay Johnson hopefully coming back healthy. These dudes are going to create attention because right now I don't think there's one dude on the Steelers offense that you can just tee off on. I think that's what makes them dangerous because of the fact that teams were teeing off on AB while AB is getting double teamed, Juju's eating. I see a lot of single teams from Juju because they're still playing in the slot. Teams are still single teaming Chase Claypool because he hasn't done enough yet to really prove that he can warrant being double teamed. Deontay Johnson just beats dudes because of how elite his route running is and how much separation he gets naturally on his own accord. And then James Washington has shown the ability to now do all that underneath dirty work and still have the vertical ability to take a top off of defense and just the physicality to finish plays like the one touchdown he had early on in the year where he just puts his shoulder down and just wills his way from the 5-yard line into the end zone. You know, that variations plus still having Vance McDonald, plus still having Eric Ebron. I think there's enough mismatches where you can have Ben Roethlisberger have effectiveness throwing the ball down the field against the guys that the Browns have, or in better terms, don't have to cover them. The big story is going to be how effective can the ground game be. I think that's something where the Steelers are potentially going to struggle if Myles Garrett starts wreaking havoc, if Chukwuma Okorafor can't hold up with Myles Garrett, or if he's on the opposite side going against Villanueva. I think that's where you're going to start seeing some issues. But that's why I feel like I'm more worried about this because the Steelers have the penchant to just flip a switch and either do it or not do it. No matter how frustrating it is as a fan, but you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough slotted game for that reason.
51 over under on this game. That's tough, huh? I think they could do the over.
I'm doing the over.
I think I would do the over on this as well. I'm just looking at, man, the Bengals and Joe Burrow and just the second game of the year, 30 points, over 300 yards passing for Burrow. He fumbled twice. He had 3 touchdown passes, 1 in garbage time. You know, they have some kind of similar weapons. They had the time of possession. They didn't get a couple of these drives sealed off, finished off the way they probably would have liked to. And that's, you know, that's a hallmark of a young team that's still growing. It's just the difference of what we're trying to say here with the Steelers. When people are complaining and saying, well, the Steelers aren't doing this, the Steelers aren't doing that. And it's like, well, last year, they would have probably lost these games. They would have lost these games. This year, they're winning these games. That's the difference between a good team and just, you know, a decent team or a bad team for that matter. That's the major difference. They're giving the Browns 3.5 here, so they expect it to be a pretty tight game as well. It could be. It's AFC North football. They're the cooks in the kitchen, or whatever Mike Tomlin said. They're gonna cook. They're gonna eat. I still like the Steelers to climb to 5-0 in this. They're still at home. There's no disruption to anything that they've been doing. It's rough from here on out for like the next month. They've got some games to play, and they're not looking ahead or past the Cleveland Browns. That's for sure. I don't think there's any way that they are. I don't think they're going to look past the Tennessee Titans either, and they're definitely going to be PO'd that they had the whole impromptu bye week, and there's going to be a little bit of payback there, I believe. Hopefully, they're not so banged up after these two games, and then they got to go to the Ravens and then Dallas. Lord knows what's going to happen with that game. So, trying to collect my thoughts here on what I feel about this game. John Hussey's referee. I haven't really seen him butcher anything. We've seen the referees, again, what was this? The Monday and Tuesday games. They don't call holding anywhere. It's just not happening. And I know we say it, this is kind of, you know, pat myself on the back here, that me and Brian were talking about this before this even became the hot topic. And I know we coined hashtag ref stink and all this other stuff, and you could call holding on any play, but geez, they're just letting it go. We're to the point where you get some guys that are very neutral or tell you how it is. Jerry Dulac is in on this now. Bob Labriola's even mentioned it. These guys don't say this type of stuff. They will not make excuses. They have no reason to. They've always been very forthtelling. They've been very blunt about it. You and I or Brian or something, you know, we'll homer it up. We'll be biased. It's okay. We'll fanboy it sometimes. But it has been an issue. I'm going to be interested in seeing what happens now that there's been a spotlight on this, and we have a quarter of football in the books now. If the league doesn't come out and tell their referees this week, particularly no Thursday game either, so maybe there's a little bit of extra officiating work, Zoom call or something, emails going around with these guys, and I just hope we have a consistently called game is more my problem. That's the one thing you don't want to have to worry about, is the other team on the field contributing to you getting beat. And we saw bad pass interference calls on either side the last week, and missed holding calls and the things of that nature. And it is, you know, in that fact of the matter, going both ways. But it's also, you know, all it takes is one play, as we're talking about, and immediately, you know, you said it. Oh, Jesse didn't catch it, or Jesse caught it, but Eric Ebron caught it too. You know, that was, yeah, I got one that's under your skin there. I know you didn't like that one, but anyways, no. I don't really like talking about the series history here, because it's a whole different team now. This isn't Hugh Jackson's 0-16 Browns. This isn't making fun of Freddie Bathroom. I mean, Freddie Kitchens or anybody like that. This is one that's a little bit tougher. And I had given the Browns some respect even the last couple of seasons, where I thought they would turn it around. They pretty much have the same roster together. Right now, their window, this is their window. They've got to do it now, because if they don't, there's going to be some turnover on this team. I think, you know, they're very young, but they're going to have guys that they've already paying guys a lot of money. There's going to be other contracts that start coming up, like a Baker Mayfield or something. We already saw what Myles Garrett got for money too. So this is going to be, you know, probably these games this year are going to be ones for the ages, especially, you know, you're looking at the tail end of, you know, Ben Roethlisberger writing his story, maybe too, the final chapters. So these are going to be some fun games. These aren't games where, you know, you necessarily make fun of the Browns, but I will say one thing. If somehow the Steelers fall on their face here, and they lose, and their undefeated streak goes out the window, and the Cleveland Browns climb to 5-1 here, and they're in some type of bragging position above them in the AFC North, you will not hear the end of it from the Cleveland fans. They are insufferable, man. And, you know, they'll talk as much smack. They've been quiet because they haven't had anything to say about the Steelers yet. The most they have is to say is what the Yinzers are all saying. Well, they should have beat the Eagles by like 50-some points. Like, Bob Labriola actually just did say that too, I think, in his Asked and Answered the other day. How many points should a team beat another NFL team? The NFL likes parity. They like teams being, you know, close and everything like that. You also brought up something else very good that I got to rewind back to as far as current events. Terry touched on this with her show. Let's talk about Ben throwing picks, maybe forcing the ball too much to a Mr. Big Checks. No longer in the NFL. For a minute there, neither was Le'Veon Bell. I mean, you look at those two guys as, you know, tops of their position. You know what I mean? Just a few years ago, 2017, Steelers 13-3. Martavis Bryant, part of that team too. And all these guys are gone and scattered. And Bell going to the Chiefs. We'll see how it works. We'll see if his patient style pays off and works in, you know, the old Marcus Allen kind of running style works there. It did when Marcus Allen went to the Chiefs. So we'll see what ends up happening. You know what I mean? But as far as I'm concerned here, you know, these games could be close to the vest. The last game, throw it out the window. You're talking Duck, Mason, whoever's playing quarterback, and lots of injuries, and the Browns still lost that game. Their coaching staff, I think they've got it together a little more. They're a little more disciplined. But I think the Steelers, it's still their yard. I still think they're the big dog. You can claim, you can make claims if you're the Ravens and you're a Ravens fan and you're peeping in on this. Okay, we got you. We heard you. We saw last year. We see what you're doing now. This isn't your conversation right now, so butt out for 2 weeks. But you got a little bit of this. Everything in the AFC North is a battle this year. I think all of these teams, and it's going to be this way for some time to come, but I still look for the Steelers. I don't want to put a score to this, but for some reason, I keep coming back to like 31-28. That's where I'm looking at. I hate to put scores out there. Amazon forced me to do it last weekend. It's just my bold prediction is basically on the offense. I can't accurately gauge how many sacks or turnovers there could be in this game for the defense. I think there could be some, but obviously in most games, it boils down to whoever turns the ball over the fewest, the least amount, and makes the least amount of mistakes. I'm going to end up winning the football game, and just hopefully Cleveland doesn't have their streak continue where they're forcing a lot of turnovers, and maybe Ben turns into a pumpkin on Sunday a little earlier than Halloween than we would like. I still like the Steelers in this one. I don't know. I got much else to say about that because I'm a little tongue-tied. It's just very hard for me. Usually I get in the crystal ball. Like last week, I'm like, nah, you know what? They're going to handle the Eagles, and they were never behind in that game. This one, this could go back and forth a little more.
Yeah, honestly, like I said at the very beginning, I think this is probably the most genuinely nervous going into a Browns Steelers game I've been in probably my entire life because of the fact that like I don't see it necessarily turning into the big brother little brother type of rivalry that it's always been, where you know as much as the Browns fans want to call it a rivalry, you know the Steelers have been fairly dominant in the recent history and long term history of this rivalry. You know, and I think, and the series, and I think that's going to potentially still go through there. But I'm at a point where if the Steelers win or the Steelers lose, I wouldn't be surprised because I think this Browns team is a genuinely good team. I know it might not seem like it early on this podcast. I'm sure the Browns fans will come crawling into it and, you know, start saying, oh, yeah, you're just being, you know, talking down on them or whatever. I realistically think that this is a very good Browns team. I think this is finally the team where all the hype going into the season is starting to pay off because they have looked good. And I think they're doing what they do well, and they finally have an intelligent guy running the program in Andrew Berry and in Kevin Stefanski. I think they both know what their image and what their product is that they're putting on the field. I think Berry has a very good idea of what he wants fundamentally from a GM's perspective. He's a very bright dude, and Kevin Stefanski is a very bright coach who has a very clear agenda for his team. And I think that's very good for the Browns who have lacked that structure in recent years. So for that reason, I don't think this is going to be the typical cakewalk thing. So all those matchups, like you said, that are in the years past shouldn't matter right now because right now this is a 4-1 Browns team and a 4-0 Steelers team, two teams that are in the midst of historic records, not saying historic performances, but historic records in terms of being undefeated for the first time since 1979 at 4-0, being 4-1 for the first time since 1994. You know, those are big deals. And one of those things is, so both, I think, are surprising. It was surprising me the Steelers haven't been 4-0 in 41 years. It's not surprising me the Browns haven't been 4-1 since 94, but it is surprising they're finally getting that point. So to sit there and say you have any genuine expectations of what to really see from this game in terms of that, definitively, Steelers all the way, I don't think you can really make that statement because I do think it's going to be a very good game. I think it's going to be easily the toughest opponent the Steelers have played. The only reason I see it could potentially not go that way is because it is a Steelers and Browns game. Because the Steelers and Browns game, just like any AFC North matchup, has the ability to either be a very closely contested, heated matchup or a complete one-way, you know, slugfest from one team. The other one kind of just folds over. You know, I don't think it's going to be that way. I do think that the you said, what, 3.5 points is the spread?
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me. I think it should be that way because I think it is going to be a very close game. I do like the Steelers in this. I think that if they were playing this game in Cleveland at this very point, I probably honestly would not take the Steelers, but because they're playing at home, they're rolling. The Steelers are finally going to be out of that bye week funk that I think has bit them in the butt so much in years past. They're going to be going into a game where they know there's going to be a lot of passion coming from one side. You know, I think the worst thing a team can do is play for revenge. I do think the Browns are going to be playing for revenge just based on the comments you've heard guys like Kareem Hunt say in the media about, you know, why we're doing this. We're doing this for Myles Garrett, we're doing this. You know, we remember what happened, all this stuff, and the Steelers haven't said a word about it. And some fans will take that as, you know, oh, the Steelers know they're wrong, so they're not going to say anything. No, the Steelers just aren't going to go down to that level and do that stuff. I think teams can too often get caught up in that kind of dramatic stuff in the background and emotions start getting high and they start taking themselves out of the game on their own accord. I think that's the worst thing the Browns could be doing right now. And if I was a Browns fan, I wouldn't want to hear that type of talk coming from my team. Let the fans do that stuff. And if you want to have those conversations in the background and you're behind in the locker room or, you know, at home on your phone in your group chats, whatever, don't put that out in the media. You know, in my mind, that's a terrible thing for you to do is coming into a game where that has such huge implications, not just for the AFC North, but honestly for the entire AFC, because you have two teams right now that are sitting in the top in the, for a playoff spot. Steelers win this game. The Browns drop to 4-2. They're already now 1-2 then at that point in the division. That's a huge hole for them to have to start climbing out of and hope that the Steelers and Ravens fall off their pedestal. You know, if the Browns win this game, then you're looking at a whole wide open division at that point in time. And you got 3 1-loss teams sitting at the top of that division, assuming the Ravens win this weekend. You know, so there's a lot of implications and you're getting distracted by all that other noise and all that stuff of what happened a year ago. You know, the Steelers and Browns have played since then and you're still bringing up that stuff just because Garrett wasn't in the game. Guess who's not playing in this game? Knock on wood. Mason Rudolph.
Find wood everywhere.
Find wood everywhere. I can find and knock on everything. But like, you know, the guy that was the centerpiece of that battle isn't even playing.
Oh, you know what? That game was such garbage. It was a short week. It was in Cleveland, Thursday night football. There was a bunch of turnovers. You lost Juju. You lost Deontay Johnson. You lost James Conner. I think somebody else may have gotten hurt. Maybe even Pouncey. Was that the game? Maybe I don't recall correctly. Was this when B.J. Finney came in and had the ball where everybody else was on the false start except for him?
I think that was New England.
Was that New England? That was the first week of the season with New England, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was early in the season that happened.
Yeah, was it? But, I mean, regardless, there was, you know, it was a mess. It was a mess of a game. So, you know, when I look at last year, it's like not only do I throw out because of – I was mainly talking about the Browns, but you could throw it out for the Steelers, and the Steelers still beat them. You know, later on with nobody, they had Kareth White out there and Deion Kane, and you know these guys aren't even like
the names,
or even on the practice squad. I mean, I think Kane still is, but you know, I digress. You know, and who else is coming back? I was looking. I think Derek Watt was finally back on this thing too. To make a comeback. You just had Deontay with his back and DeCastro limited, and everybody else looks to be healthy. They get healthy. Just look out. It's all about staying healthy and keeping the guys off the COVID list and everything like that. So that's a whole other thing I'm not going to get into right now. So we're up against it. Zach, hey, thanks for coming out of from under your rock, man. I mean, like...
It's good to be back.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today, man. It's good seeing you. Hopefully we see some more of you. Or, you know, you could always join Brian every now and then. You know, I know he's got some other business to handle right now, and our best well wishes go to him and his family. So if he cares to share, he could say whatever he would like with that. But that's personal. Just know that, you know, you didn't necessarily bump him. We've always thought of us all as the A-team here. It's when you get into some other guys that are like in the shady cracks of the real underground of the underground, like a Zach Celadonia. You don't want that guy on camera. Let me tell you, I have to plug him every time just to give him the warm and fuzzies. Gotcha. I gotta say his name. But hey, thank you, man, sincerely. And everybody's probably happy to put a name to a face with you too, even though we looked like a bunch of clowns a few years ago whenever the hell I posted that picture of both of us.
My James Harrison jersey. Not my James Harrison jersey. Whatever. I think it was Casey Hampton. I ripped my Casey Hampton jersey off. Started whipping that thing around.
The big snack.
It was a big game. I had to bring the big snack out for the big game, and I had to rip it off for the big play. You know, so you got to do what you got to do to get those wins.
Yeah, and let me tell you, if he happens to be listening, the guy who sits next to me in the stadium, Miles, who's about my same age, I mean, you probably remember, there's no social distancing with Miles. That guy gets so physical, he beats me up sometimes during the game.
Ace throwing dudes around.
It's like being in a mosh pit. And I owe him a beer. He bought me a beer for my birthday. The game, Miami game last year, was actually on my birthday. The Titans game's a few days ahead, and I'm looking to maybe get out there. I gotta twist someone's arm to kind of sit in the game with me, or I'm gonna eat like one of these tickets. You only buy two. You have to buy two. And I know some people were asking questions about that, but most of the places are in pairs of two or four. If you're looking at the road games and the Steelers games too, or, you know, there might be some three packages in there, but there's no singles being sold unless it's somebody. I don't even know that they're permitting any of them to be sold that way. So I know there was a question out there. I answered that one via email. But yeah, you know what? Maybe a lucky fan will get to sit with me if they feel comfortable enough. You know, it has been nice not having the third quarter, the fourth quarter cutoff for the beer during the game. So you don't have to worry about that when you're watching from home. But hopefully get out there again real soon. So maybe, I don't know, you've got quite the haul to get down there. But if you're around in Pittsburgh, maybe we'll catch one later this year too. So thanks for joining me once again, Zach. And, you know, I'm pointing all over the place. I got the camera. The camera's right in front of me. You know, I got him over here, microphone here. Just try not to whack the microphone to my one side and make all kind of noise. You know, total amateur hour here. But, you know, I'm getting used to the whole video. I'm not camera shy by any means. I mean, it's not like I'm sitting here. Well, Brian tried to say he didn't have any pants on the other day. And you know, I'm like, don't stand up, dude. Just let it be. So
be the least surprising thing I've heard all week.
Yeah, so Zach, hey, thanks for joining me once again, man. And, you know, best wishes on you and your new coaching gig. And, you know, we'll send you a housewarming present, you know, other than, you know, the Carhartt hat or whatever here. So don't be a stranger and come back soon.
I look forward to it. You know how much I love being on here with you guys. So look forward to it. Thanks for having me again, Joe.
Yes, absolutely. So, folks, that is the professor slash coach slash guru slash you could have been doctor at one point, almost like an evil mastermind, you know, when you were going after that particular field too. So he wears many hats aside from the Carhartt one, a one Zach Meckler. My name's Joe Kuzma, and I had been wearing the training camp hat that, you know, obviously didn't get this year, so I've been a sad panda for a while here. But you know, we'll make do with a Steelers win over the Cleveland Browns, so we could shut them up for just a little bit and get a little bit of a lead here in the division. So don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Until next time, as we always say here, we encourage everyone out there to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.